The Joseph story that we've heard today is the end of the story, or very close towards the end of it. And the important thing for us to remember is that this Joseph story is not always either generous or victorious. It's a horrendous story. We forget that Joseph as a child, as a young person, was arrogant, privileged, spoiled, and that's why his brothers hated him. When he touched, this is the one, it's not always the story that comes through, you know, the Joseph and the Technicolor dreams coat thing that we kind of romanticize about this story. This is a person who had a capacity, a real gift to interpret dreams. And yet where he gets himself offside with even his own family is the way he shares those interpretations, because he doesn't understand them completely. So as a young person, he has a dream, has two actually, where there are a range of things. One is shears of wheat, like stacks of wheat in a field, and another an image in the sky. But the end result of it is that one stands taller than the others and all the others bow down to it. And then when he comes to share those stories with his parents and his brothers, he says, and what these mean is that one day I'm going to be greater than all of you and you're all going to worship me. That's surely a good way to get offside with the rest of your family. I'm not sure how many of you had a favourite in your family. Most of you probably were the favourite, I guess. A couple of you going, yes, I was. But certainly Joseph was well regarded by his father. But because of this behaviour that he'd had when he was sent to check on how his brothers were going in a distant area looking after the stock, when they saw him coming, the brothers say, here comes the dreamer, let's kill him. One of them stands up and says, no, no, that's terrible. Let's just drop him in a dry well and we'll work out what we're going to do after that. And then all they do is they sell him as a slave. May as well make a profit out of getting rid of your brother, I suppose. So they sell him as a slave. But his life doesn't improve. Joseph's life is on a horrendous trajectory. He ends up working as a slave in a household, and the wife of the owner of the house takes a bit of a shine to him and sort of makes romantic advances that he rejects. So she accuses him of rape. So then he's arrested, he's imprisoned and left there to rot. People from the king's court end up there and they have dreams and he interprets the dream for them. His gift hasn't gone. And he says, when you're with the king, remind him, tell him what I've done for you. But they don't. Until the king starts having these, or the pharaoh starts having these incredible dreams about, you know, one incredibly fat cow eating sort of seven skinny ones and not getting any fatter, these weird dreams. And no one can understand them. And then suddenly the cupbearer remembers, oh, there's this guy I met in prison. How's that for a line? Can anyone help me understand my dream? Well, there's this guy I met in prison. How desperate the Pharaoh must have been to accept advice. But when he explained what was going to happen, that this famine was going to come and he needed to store up before that came so they would have enough to survive, and that's why he rises to prominence. But even when his brothers come seeking help, they don't recognise who he is, and he does what I would regard as a typically brother thing at that point. When he sends them all off, he hides a gold goblet from his room in the bag of one of the brothers and then sends them after and saying, these people have stolen from me. Frames his brother for theft and holds him there until the others come back. This last part of the story is what we hear is the victorious part. It is a story of redemption, though. He is proved right in the end. But it's about how we go about that that can be important at times. God uses him to save his family, and they do bow down to him. His dream was absolutely accurate, but he didn't understand the depth of it. His redemption, though, is not only made complete because he's proven right, but because he also chooses to be merciful and conciliatory to rebuild those relationships. We often speak of being peacemakers and reconcilers, and that's talking about playing our part in helping the reconciliation between the Creator and the creature, between God and humanity, or God and even the whole of creation, that we play a part in enabling that to happen, because that was the work of Jesus' life, and we're called to emulate that. That's the redemption that we see in Joseph. The one who has every right to be bitter and vindictive is instead healing, merciful, and forgiving. There are lots of things that we can learn from this story, but that must be one of the main ones. That the person who has, in a sense, every right to be grieved chooses instead to make peace and create hope. The second one belongs to the learning of the brothers. They were wrong, and there is serious humility at play in this story as they have to accept the protection and provision from their brother, who they treated so poorly. And there are times when we find ourselves in relationship with people who we know perhaps we've mistreated. And when we need their help and they offer it, we refuse to accept it because of our own guilt. So there's a serious humility that takes place in the brothers too, that allow them to accept what's being offered and in turn, of course, to recognise their mistake. In the gospel reading, we also see some of this happening. The Pharisees apparently think that Jesus is treating them unfairly. I love this line where the disciples come to Jesus and say, "The Pharisees had their feelings hurt by what you said." Don't you think that's remarkable? It's kind of quaint, isn't it? The Pharisees, you've hurt their feelings. These are the people who were always trying to trap Jesus with their words. Always critical of the things that Jesus did, this time talking about taking and eating things without washing his hands properly. So it's okay for the Pharisees to hurt someone else's feelings by the things that they say, but in this story they come and they send a message, "You've hurt our feelings." But Jesus says the things that come out of our mouths come from our heart. And so what comes out of our mouths is not a problem. Is the problem, not what goes into them. And when we think about the way we order our lives, and maybe you've never quite thought about it like this before, but our behaviours, the things that we do and the things that we say, are essentially a result of our values. The way we live our life, the things that we think are important or not important, shape the way we think, speak and act. And our beliefs shape our values. So the things that we believe in the core of our being, in the heart of our hearts, shape our values, and our values shape our actions. And sometimes you can trace them back the other way. You can tell from a person's actions the things that they value and perhaps even the things that they believe, or a glimpse perhaps. It follows and sits comfortably with the scriptures that remind us that we are transformed from within. The transformation will show itself in the things that we say and do. But transformation is hard work. Who we are is a result of so many influences, and that they've been combined over the years, and so they're hard to break, hard to change. Some of those things that make us who we are environmental. They are the hardest ones to shed. They are the things that are trained into us by our families, our neighbourhoods, schools, churches, mentors, instructors, coaches, employers, politicians and business leaders. All the people who have surrounded us through our whole life shape something of who we are. And we need some of those people at times that we think we do, to get along in this world. And they in turn have been shaped by all those similar people in their lives. They shape who we are and what we believe and how we think and how we act. And they're the hardest restraints to overcome. And I believe that in this gospel story today, we see Jesus stretching and being stretched, but also something of a product of his environment. Remember, we can never ever forget that Jesus grew up as a good Jewish boy. That all the things about his community, about his church, his synagogue, the things that his parents said, remember, the political system and the religious system were the same thing in a Jewish community. Certainly there was an overlay of Roman authority, that's different again. But these are all the things that shaped who Jesus was. Jesus was fully human as much as Jesus was fully divine. And I always find this story incredibly confronting. No matter how often I read it, I still find it that way. When he says, "I have been sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." At this, the woman came and fell at his feet. "Help me, sir." Can you imagine her begging at Jesus' feet? "Help me, sir." And he answers, "It isn't right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." His answer is, "No, I won't help you." That's true. She doesn't even argue. She doesn't even say, "No, no, no." She says, "That's true. It's wrong to take the food for the children and give it to the dogs. But even the dogs eat the leftovers that fall. They eat the crumbs that fall." And then he answers her, "You are a woman of great faith." What a turnaround. Don't you think that's amazing? Isn't that incredible? You are, for one, he says, "No, I haven't come to talk to you. Go away." And then suddenly, "You are a woman of great faith. What you want will be done for you." And at that moment, her daughter was healed. The thing that's confronting about this is that this isn't gentle Jesus, meek and mild, that many of us were taught about in Sunday school, if you attended Sunday school. I know some of you didn't. But that's the kind of idea that we were given as kids. Jesus is much more than that in this story. And certainly we know that Jesus is much more than gentle Jesus, meek and mild, but that's often one of those things that sits in the back of our minds as part of the way we were formed. This Jesus comes across, at least in the beginning of the story, as somewhat crass, perhaps even rude, at the very least dismissive. His basic response is that he's not come to help her. Is he also responding to the pleading of the disciples? You know, send her away. Perhaps Jesus is just having a bad day. We all have bad days, don't we? When perhaps we don't respond the way that we ought, the next day we feel guilty, we have to go and apologise. He is fully human after all, as I said before. So if, as we say, we are wanting to help more people become more like Jesus, what do we learn from this Jesus story? The words of that funky little hymn that we sing from time to time come to mind. "Lord, help me learn from listening to my neighbour when I'd rather speak and go." Isn't this story one of those moments when certainly the disciples are influencing Jesus just to speak and go and not to listen? Jesus listens, and in listening hears, and in hearing discovers a faithfulness and trust that is rare. Even though coming from one of his closest followers, he sees an annoying pest who his persistence is nothing more than a troublesome nuisance. They don't want to engage with her. They just want Jesus to send her away. She understands the politics of national relations. She doesn't even try to argue that she should deserve time. She seems perfect to understand perfectly why a Jewish man would not have time for the hopes and dreams of a Canaanite woman. "That's true, sir." And perhaps a paraphrase of the next comment might sound something like, "And that's okay, because I don't need your full attention. All I need is an inattentive sideways glance as you pass by, and my daughter will be made well." The activity in this passage and the interchange between Jesus and the woman is entirely consistent with the story in Acts where people bring out their friends to sit on the street so the shadow of the apostles might fall on them as they walk past. It's entirely consistent with the experience in the UK where people were meeting for healing prayer inside a building, and while remarkable things were happening inside that building, the people walking past outside found themselves healed, not even knowing what was going on. This overflowing of Christ's capacity to touch and change is remarkable. It sits with the story of the woman who snuck up behind Jesus, not even needing to attract his attention, but just wanting to touch the hem of his garment. because she believed that even that would bring her wholeness. It's the same as the embarrassed friend who sat in front of the horrible TV that was crackling and popping and the vision was snowy when he'd invited this person to come and hear Billy Graham lead a televised outreach experience and was so embarrassed by the poverty of the quality of what they was presenting, and then was equally stunned when the voice on the TV says, "So if you'd like to give your heart to Jesus, kneel with me now right in your lounge room." And his mate got off the lounge and did. There are times when God works through us, sometimes with us, and sometimes despite us. My hope is that we would make sure that we aim to at least try to be one of the first two and not the third one. There was a little song that we used to sing some time ago. It's called the Shaking Song. I want to share the words with you. I'm not going to ask you to sing it, but I want to share the words with you because it sits with some of these ideas of having to let go of some of the environmental stuff that shaped us and allow ourselves to hear where Jesus is leading us next. The little chorus says, "He's shaking me out of the things that I know and he's leading me to a new place. He's shaking me out of the things that must go and leading me on by his grace. It's safer to stay with the things that I know and walking in ways than walking in ways that are new. But if by his Spirit he calls me to go, then his enabling carries me through. My spirit is willing, but my flesh is so weak. And I want to be faithful to you, but it's hard to respond when I first hear you speak, because I'm never quite sure what to do. Our gift may be singing or dancing or mime, yet he'll still take us out on a limb. For faith is required to do something new, and obedience glorifies him. So let us not give him an offering of praise that's costing us nothing to bring. But let us in faith step out in the Lord, so with dancing and leaping we'll sing. He's shaking me out of the things that I know and leading me to a new place. He's shaking me out of the things that must go and leading me on by his grace." So like Jesus, let's make sure that we don't just stick with the things that we know. Even worse still, stick with the things that we think we know. But be open with reflection, consideration, prayerfulness and compassion to all that God is calling us to do and to become, personally and corporately. Amen.